97.9 The Box. It's the Mad Hatter Morning Show and homie of the show, Paul Wall, is in the building.
What it do, baby? What it do?
Paul, what's going on? Before we get into this whole, Paul is into dogs now, so this is a new life for Paul. But before we get into that, what about the music? I ain't heard nothing coming out of the camp in a minute.
Oh, yeah, I got lots of music, man. I stay working year-round. I seem to struggle on the release of the music.
So, I got
like 200 songs on my computer, but, you know.
Do you really?
Yeah, but putting them on iTunes and dropping them on Spotify, that'd be where the issues come into play.
What is generally the holdback for you? Are you not happy with 200 songs that you have?
Nah, not at all. I'm just, you know, doing the paperwork, the administrative mind frame.
Oh, that's right. You everything.
It's just a different type of mind frame, and I'm trying to, you know, maintain my artistic integrity of, man, sometimes when I get to marketing and my marketing mind frame, it takes me out of my artistic mind frame. You know, for instance, you know, this is something I struggle with a lot of times of, you know, do I want to have the artistic integrity of the music or do I want to have more sales? And sometimes you can have both, but typically what sells the most isn't always my preference in the type of music that I want to make or listen to. So
who determines that? Because you your boss now.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I've been in.
So who makes that decision? Because obviously this is where it's hard at.
At the end of the day, it comes on me.
Commercial,
yeah.
And you're like, that was cool. I was having fun in the studio, but I ain't trying to release that. But everybody over here is telling you, well, Paul, we know that this one is going to be a win for you.
That's why I've been struggling on putting stuff out, because I'm like, man, let me put my favorite out, this, you know, that I like to jam the most, but that's, you know, that's a certain niche group of people, you know, slab riders who ride around, you know, at 3 a.m. riding around the hood, or just, you know, that's what I like to listen to, what I like to make. But like I say, that's not what sells the most. So I don't know. I have other people like that will help me pick songs. Hey, you need to put this one on there. You need to put that one on there. But my mind frame is I go in the studio, I record and work pretty much every single day. And then, you know, once I get to a certain amount of songs, I put them out. And I've really been trying to not overthink things, because that's what when I got to do the creative side and the marketing side, I'm overthinking everything. And then nothing comes out. Nothing gets done. So I've been trying to not overthink it as much and just put the music. I got a homeboy named Rich the Factor. Rich the Factor, he's a very successful independent rap artist from Kansas City. He's been making music for 15, maybe 20 plus years. His like process of putting out music is he releases music. His schedule is like every month, every other month. He doesn't do a whole lot of fanfare and marketing for each project. He just releases the projects once every couple months, and his fan base buys it, and he's got tons of projects out. That's kind of the direction of what I want to do. I want to make music for, you know, just because I got a wide variety of styles that I can do, you know. So, and some people will be like, okay, I'm gonna put an album out. It's gonna have a song for the girls, song for the club, song to ride around, a song for this, song for that. You know, I don't like doing that. I like making projects that are more central themed, where I got a whole project about the club, a whole project about getting money, a whole project for cars, a whole project for whatever, you know. So I got a lot of music on the hard drive. It's coming out soon, man. Definitely got coming out in the next, probably the next month. I got a project called Mind Over Matter, which is you know, probably gonna be the first installation of my every month, every other month, start doing releases. And then me and DJ High C, we still got our Frozen Face series, you know, which basically is, you know, just me freestyling on other people's beats. We got another one of those coming pretty soon before the end of the year. But in terms of my music, man, I got a whole lot of music made, and it's just, you know, putting it out. So it's coming. It's all coming soon. So be on the lookout. Mind Over Matter, Hall of Fame Hustler, The Great Wall of Texas. I got a lot of music ready, baby. We ready.
Now, for people that don't know, we got this incredible MC in the city of Houston called Tubby Nwigwe.
Yes,
you did a song with him. How hard was it for him to convince you to get on this track?
Oh, not at all, man. You know, when I first
saw
him,
called Juice.
Yeah, my boy Goo introduced me to his music of, man, hey, check out Toby. He's from Houston. He's dope. And then he physically introduced me to him. He was like, hey, Toby, this is Paul, this is Toby. And then from there, of course, we linked up. You know, it was a mutual admiration for each other. We liked each other's style. We both were dope. You know, of course, we got to be pretty cool. from there it was hey man, we, you know, it was just more game and I don't want to say mentorship, but like just
I was gonna say that
game.
Because he kind of looked up to you. So was that kind of ain't it interesting the way the tables start to turn? You,
yeah.
I mean, you coming, you becoming. I guess you are now to some people in yeah. Houston. You're OG.
I for sure. I love giving that advice on mentorship, but I try not to overstep my boundaries because. The advice or things I have to say, sometimes people don't want to receive it or they're not ready to receive what I have to say or they're not at the level where they can grasp or comprehend what I'm telling them because they're looking at their career from their mind frame of where they're at now. You know, a lot of times the vantage point of perspective of where they're at right now, they don't understand that it's a lot bigger than this. The horizon is a lot wider than just what you can see right here at this immediate moment. And a lot of times for artists who haven't seen the grasp of what's to come or the road down, you know, down the road, you know, they might not comprehend what I'm trying to tell them or the advice I'm trying to get. So a lot of times I might get somebody advice and they might be like, man, he don't know what he's talking about, you know, right. whatever. Or right. And, you know, it's a real thing where people come up and, you know, people will ride you nuts, you know, where they just want to ride your wave to, you know, they want to capitalize off of your success. So there's a lot of people who will do that, artists, producers, DJs, managers, or period, everybody, period, where just, you know, they know who you are, but they don't really want to be cool with you until you make it. And then when you make it, it's, oh, yeah, yeah, I've been knowing you since, you know, this and that, but yeah, but you didn't support me till now, you know. But it, you know, so it's when you're an artist, too, sometimes you kind of get defensive of who's trying to help you and why are they trying to help you, what are the motives. So, you know, with Toby, for sure, it was a... Man, I got a whole lot I love to share with him because I want to see him be successful. A lot of times, too, what I'm telling him is from my experiences. So what worked for me might not work for him, but I like to share it with him so he can understand why we made the decisions we made so that he can, you know, kind of get a, you know, little perspective and hopefully it'll help him. But for sure, when he was like, man, because, you know, matter of fact, me and DJ High C, we dropped a Frozen Face mixtape with a freestyle on there, and I did like an old Swisher House style freestyle on it. It's That Power Whiskey. And then Toby used to jam in it. He used to always hit me every day. Knock, knock, who is it? It's That Power Whiskey. And just quote my lyrics. And then he'd be like, hey, man, when we do our song, I want to do something to sound like this. This is the style of song I want to do with you. You know what I'm saying? excuse me. Me and Toby both were very artistic musically, where it's not just here's the beat, where's your verse, recorded, done. It's more like this is the concept of the song, this is the vision I see, this is what I want to do.
There's a lot of thought put into it.
A lot of thought.
It sounded like it too, and the visual too.
Yeah.
There's a lot of thought put into the visual too.
For sure.
Jamming though, man. Just jamming.
The visual was all him, his squad, his team. Shout out to them. They killed it. They killed the visual for sure.
Now, the other thing, Paul, I'm always curious. You've been in the business for a couple of years now. I say you are OG to it. What is the Paul Wall regret as some of the business decisions that were made?
Man, you know, I've always been loyal to a fault. You know, thankfully.
Wait a minute. He knows it.
Yeah,
did you just
sure.
say that, Matt?
Yeah,
I mean, that's what I've always said about Paul. That's what I always have felt
that's
about Paul.
Literally, he just said your words. Paul is loyal to a fault. That's a quote from you.
Yeah.
Funny that he said it just the way you said it.
I mean, because I watch people's lives and how they deal with things, and I always said that, I mean, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it could be a good thing.
Or it could be a bad thing. So, you know.
I think I've been blessed to have, I've been the people I've chosen or that God led me to be loyal to, like on this type of level of loyalty, I think, you know, I've been blessed that those people were people
but
that didn't take
advantage
of. But
you also said it was just a downfall too, though.
For sure, you know, sometimes it's hard to move on when you know, I don't know, I feel a graciousness, a gratitude, or I feel like I owe people that, you know, there's definitely a lot of people that think I owe them when I don't owe them jack. But the people that really did, you know, help me or contribute, they don't want nothing from me. But I, in turn, also feel like I can never repay them back. People like you, I can never repay you back. A lot, not just DJs or people who signed me, or you know, but there's a lot of people who gave me a lot of friends, close, dear friends that I could never buy them anything or give them anything or do anything for them that would ever repay, you know, what they have done for me. So sometimes it's kind of there are some people who take advantage of that, but thankfully that I haven't had, you know, most of the people I've been loyal to, you know, are loyal to me as well, so they don't take advantage of that. But for sure, I think that would be one of my biggest downfall. My other biggest regret, I think, would be you know, my sleep management. I already don't sleep too much, you know what I'm saying? But sometimes that could be a bad thing because I go too hard. And then when you go too hard, you got to oversleep to compensate for not sleeping.
Now you can't get up.
Yeah.
Can't move. Lethargic for a minute.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
I agree with that, though. You are loyal to a fault. But I will say this. I think that's your most beautiful characteristic, too. Because we say this to people. I said, Paul is probably one of the most beautiful rappers you're going to ever meet.
Thank you.
He's legitimate, and it's very real. You hate that about him, but you love that about him, too. You know, I know that person.
Yeah.
This is the guy that's going to sign the last autograph of 3,000 people.
Yeah.
And trust, take it from me, I hated that.
Yeah, you and Goo kind of have a
from
similar
from a record
mentality.
Label owner perspective, I hated that.
Right.
And I always will.
And you see and understand the benefit of
I
taking
do.
The pictures, but
I
you
do.
Also are like,
Paul, we got to be somewhere in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So, but I know it was coming from a very sincere, and here's the thing, too. That person, the last person who autographed you did sign, they remember forever, they're a fan forever, and they continue to support you till this day.
You know,
so it's a benefit to it for you.
I was in the airport going to Vegas to do a show, and I was running. I was always taught, when you're early, that's on time. When you're on time, that's late. And when you're late, that's unacceptable. I was always taught that. So usually I'm early.
Shut up, J-Mac. Let him speak.
But I'm always running a little late at the airport, standing in line. And, you know, some guy comes. You know, I thought I'm standing in the security line for about 5 minutes. Some guy comes up, and he just doesn't say nothing to nobody. He just is like, he's in a rush, too. And he's like, excuse me, just passing by everybody. And I'm like, man, is this guy cutting like that? And he get to me. I'm like, wait, hold on. You know, you're not going to cut. You got to wait. So, of course, he's like, oh, I'm in a rush. I'm like, yeah, I'm in a rush, too. We all are late. Whatever. Anyway, then he's like, oh, snap, Paul Wall. And he recognized me. And I'm like, damn, one guy recognized me, and I got to stop him from catching this plane. But, I he did make it. But, I feel bad. Like, damn, I know you're a fan, but at the same time, you can't just cut in front of everybody. Like, I ain't wearing no cutting like that. But, and then, he posted a picture. He shot me. Hey, shout out to Paul Wall. He ain't had nothing bad to say. But in my mind, all I'm thinking is, damn, man, why I stopping me going
to
eat
all the
soda?
Guys to stop.
Yeah, I'm like, man, I want to recognize me, man. I felt bad. Like, damn, I should have just let him go. But because he didn't have nothing bad to say. But that's all. Even now, I'm still thinking, like, man, he probably mad at me. Whatever. I should have let him go.
That's Paul beating himself up. This is probably something that happened a year ago. Yeah. He's still beating himself up to this day.
Man, another thing, man, me and my wife were going to Hawaii for her birthday. And we were running late, too. I'm not going to put that on her. we were running late. I'll take it. It's our anniversary so I'll take the blame for that. But no, we run it. And the people working at the airport, they start recognizing me, taking pictures, this and that. Then we miss our flight because we taking pictures with the staff, the Airport United staff. Man,
y'all missed the flight?
We missed our flight. Had to go back. Had to catch the flight the next day.
Your fault.
That was your
fault. Yeah, for sure.
And I know she got on you.
Well, I mean, she couldn't because we was late because she was
already
running. Yeah, we were already running late. Okay. It just was the icing on the cake. They were taking pictures. But then that's where God kind of leveled the playing field, where God's like, nah, Paul, you can't be mad at her. I'm gonna make it even. So I kind of, you know what I'm saying? So I couldn't be mad at her. She couldn't be mad at me. It was both our fault.
What year anniversary are y'all celebrating, by the way?
This is our 14th year.
Holy
is it, 14th,
wow. 14 married, 16
What's the key?
Together.
You got to just tell me one key to a long-lasting relationship.
For sure, it wouldn't be possible at all without God in our life and our family. Looking at her as a partner, as a team, not as somebody that's there for my pleasure or somebody that's there for my convenience. She's not my assistant. She don't work for me. She's my partner. Mm-hmm. So we're equals in it. You know, it for sure is like real teamwork. What do I want in life? What does she want out of life? Like, you know, the whole shebang, what do we want? I want a partner, I want a family, I want to raise the family right. I want the morals that I was raised off of, I want my kids to have that, I want my wife to have that. Mm-hmm. We got that. So it's a real sense of we in this together. Now, she has her own life in her own world, like I have my own life, my own career, my own world. That's important as well. But as, you know, one thing we have to recognize is that your partner has that. Sometimes we get caught up in, what do I have going on? Mm-hmm. You know, she's got to adjust and change her schedule for me. But, You know, I just the same way she does for me, I got to do it for her. I got to do the same things for her. I got to sacrifice for her because she has her own feelings, her own mind, her own goals, whatever, all these things that, you know, you have to look at it like unselfishly, because it's easy to be like, oh, I got all this going on. You need to adjust your time and, you know, to make things easy for me.
I'm glad you're speaking on your wife. Now, your wife is definitely into fitness, but I'll never see you joining any of the fitness and all you joining, and I just don't see it because I follow him.
So let me get this straight.
No, hey, I'm asking.
I see your wife, but Paul, you a fat bastard.
I didn't say that. That's how they feel.
What's wrong with you?
How they feel.
Damn.
I didn't say that.
What's up with a salad in your life, dog?
I got cabbage and rolls, man.
So are you working out somewhere?
No, that's a fair question.
And are, you know, has she motivated you? Because she's really into fitness. She's getting bigger. And bigger. I see her in different cities all the time.
Yeah, she's fine as hell, and there ain't no way I can let her be fine and I'm gonna be fat. So I definitely get my workout on a little bit, but usually it's from a sense of, damn, she looking good. I gotta look good. I can't look weak out here. You know, she got a much more intense workout schedule than me. My working out is like jogging or like, you know, jail workouts where I'm doing push-ups and jumping jacks and pull-ups. Stuff like
okay,
that.
Okay.
I mean, what she does, you know, she's like, she works out every day. You know?
Right,
and she has her classes she teaches, but then she'll also be like, oh, what you about to do? I'm about to go check out this. There's this, you know, instructor who has a class over here. I've been wanting to check out. I'm about to go check this class out. Well,
constantly working on her craft.
For sure. She's been on the road with it, too. She's been going on tour with it. That's dope. She got her own, like, line of merch. She got her own squad of people that come with her on the road. She got a nice following, man. I'm real proud of her.
I see. Good, and speaking of that, I knew y'all were in Austin a couple of months ago for the Grammys.
Yeah.
And, you know, she works in Austin a lot, doing a lot of shows down there. But how's it being on the board? You know, you've been on the board for quite some time. Yeah. So how do you feel about being on the board? And are y'all making progress, you think?
For sure. Man, shout out to the Recording Academy. Shout out to the Grammys. You know, I've been on the board of governors for a while. I'm a third-time trustee on the National Board of Trustees. Which is, I look at it like a huge honor. Of course, it's a huge honor. I'm representing Texas. I'm representing hip-hop. But I'm also representing every form of music and every professional out there, even non-members. Even if you're not a member of the Grammys, I'm representing you in the Academy, what we do. I don't know if we saw recently the CASE Act just passed. There's, you know, in the House of Representatives, there's a lot of things we do on a political front where we're at the Music Modernization Act a couple years ago passed. I don't know if we saw Donald Trump sign that into or whatever. There's a few things that have been passing that have been very beneficial for, you know, copyright laws, for musicians and things, you know, some things that we do, of course, those things are important. But, you know, the Recording Academy does a lot of things, you know, in school, music in schools. We do a lot of programs, things like that. But in terms of the actual Grammy Awards, that's what everybody, basically most people know the Recording Academy for. It's a huge honor to represent, you know, with the awards, the nominations. It's all democratic how people get nominated and how people win. You know, if you're a voting member of the Grammys, which I am, which, you know, there are people, you know, there's lots of people in the city who are voting members. You get to submit things to get nominated. You get to vote on what gets nominated, and you get to vote on what actually wins as well. So it's all democratic, and you know, it's a great thing to be a part of. But sometimes it's like pulling nails.
So how do you think
sometimes.
Y'all have been doing with the picks y'all been picking lately?
I disagree with almost everyone every year, but I'm only one vote, and there's like 20,000 voting members.
Right.
So you know, it all comes down to membership. Who is our membership that's voting? We need more people in, you know, the categories that I personally struggle with my personal opinion is, you know, a lot of times in the rap categories, I feel like it should have been something else that was nominated or should have won. But like I said, I'm only one vote. It all comes from, we got to have the right members. We got to have people in our rap community on board as members. So shout out to the new recruit and the new members who just joined this past year, Megan Thee Stallion, Lizzo, June James. These are some of our Houston natives who, you know, joined. Travis Scott, he's also a member. You know, this year, there's some people I've been trying to get as members for. I've been trying to get Slim Thug to be a member for 10
years. What are the qualifications to be a member? What do you need to be a member?
The membership process has changed. It used to be if you have a certain amount of credits, then you're eligible to be a member. You submit and you're a member. But now there's a review process where you same thing. You have to fill out an application, but it's a little more stringent, a little more strict getting in. You got to, you know what I'm saying? It's not just based off the qualifications. It's more off of the type of professional you are. Now, let me say this. To be a member of the Grammys has nothing to do with how many records you sold, has absolutely nothing to do with if you're on a major record label, and it doesn't matter who you work with. Like, you don't have to, oh, I can only be a member if I work with, you know, Beyonce. You know, of course, that adds to your credibility. It looks good on your resume. And there are things you have to have. You have to have career substantiation, meaning that you have to have a career in music. But it's not based off of, do you have a major deal? How many records you sold? It's more based off of, are you a professional?
Okay. Now, I know I hadn't seen you in a while, and I know I'm taking over the interview, but I got some questions for you.
Yes, sir.
In the news, it's been people lately, I can't remember this story. It was a Hispanic lady. She used the N-word. And
Gina Rodriguez.
Yes.
People were coming after her. And I know that you be around a lot of people. And I just want to know how you feel. And, you know, some people came at her and were mad. Some people were like, you know, I'm not so mad. Right. I want to know how you feel about it.
Well, you know, I'm a, you know, Johnny used the N-word all the time. No, I was playing.
There's only one Johnny. I saw a lot of people pulling out their grill.
Wait a minute.
Now, for the record, I ain't never heard Johnny use that. And we done been on the road before with DJs. Sometimes there will be DJs that'll try to get them to do a drop. Hey, Johnny,
Johnny
do a drop.
Johnny has never used the N-word.
Johnny will not use the N-word. He is not going to do it. I ain't never heard him use the N-word. No, I'm just playing.
Okay, that was funny because you threw me off. I had another whole set of
questions. Now I lightened it up. Now, man, I mean, I was always taught, my mama always taught me that the N-word is off limits, as was all cuss words was off limits for me.
I understand, but you grew around a lot of urban people
and
stuff
people all
like
the
that.
Time would be like, hey, you can use it, you can say it. Of course, wait a minute.
There was brothers that gave you permission to use the word,
people
Paul?
Tell me that every day of my life. They'll say that. Hey, you can say it. I don't know if they're trying to get me to say it because they think it's going to be funny if I say it, or if they really feel like that.
We gave Jimbo a pass.
A lot of people that I'm around.
A test pass.
Yeah. A lot of people I'm around, they could care less if I say it or not at all, because, you know, some of it comes to intent. I don't say that, or would I, because out of respect, one, for my mama, who raised me not to say that word, but also out of respect for my kids, out of respect for my wife, out of respect for myself. I wasn't taught I can't say the word because I'm white. I was taught you can't say that word because it's a hateful, evil word. Mm. Now, even if it's not used today in those sentiments all the time,
you still
it's
that.
Still the base of where the word came from. Mm. It still has those meanings, and I'm not going to continue it. So me personally, I'm not going to use the word. You're not going to hear me saying it. I don't support nobody saying the word, but definitely, people of other races, I mean, I don't know. I'm not here judging anyone saying, you know, I'm not leading the charge.
Because you're around people who use the N-word all the time, Paul.
Right.
It's just the truth of the matter.
Right, and if I'm going to get on somebody, it's not going to be a random celebrity. It's all people in my immediate circle that I could get on if I wanted to. Right. But, you know, I just let, hey, man, people say it how they was raised or how they feel comfortable. I choose not to, and I get uncomfortable around people who use it. There's people who are, you know, who are black who use it. Every sentence. And that makes me uncomfortable sometimes when I'm around anybody who uses it, just because that's just how I was raised. This is what I was on.
I'm glad you brought up your son. Your son is a black male. You know, skin is brown. Mm-hmm. Hold on.
Just give me the hand.
It's not your interview anymore.
Well, okay, gotcha.
How do you feel, and what do you tell him about them pulling over black males with the police officers out there? Because they will see him as black. Definitely. He don't care how white his daddy is. They see him as black.
Man, we were riding last week or a couple weeks ago. You know, it was yesterday in my mind. But we were riding, you know, and we're in my slab in a Cadillac. Me and my son, just me and my son. He's in the front seat. And we're in traffic. You know, a police officer gets behind us. Because it's traffic. He just got behind us, and then he got over, and then he got off. You know, it had nothing to do with me. But in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, it's a cop behind us. Oh, we don't get pulled over. As I think anytime I ever see police, whether I'm doing something wrong or not, it's just how I feel because I don't want to get pulled over. I don't want to have to go through dealing with getting a ticket. I don't want to have to. Sometimes I get pulled over just because they want to ask me what color paint it is. You know, I get pulled over. They want to take a picture with the car, whatever. And sometimes they get targeted because they like, oh, that's Paul Wall. Let's pull them over and give them a hard time and then let them make it, whatever, you know, whatever. But, you know, imagine those type of things are like inconveniences. Right. But imagine feeling of, I don't want to get pulled over because I don't want to die. You right. know, so I don't feel that. Right. I feel inconvenienced if I get pulled over or the fear of the worst that could happen. Maybe, I don't know, I could go to jail. I don't know. I don't do anything, especially car related. You can't, ain't nothing you can take me to jail for.
Right.
Ain't no weed in the car. Ain't no drugs in the car. Ain't none of that. I'm not doing nothing crazy. But you never know, you know.
How do you tell your son?
Okay, I'm getting off track.
Go back
we'll get,
to.
Yeah, we'll get Cooper to edit it. Now, my son, we in the car, I see the police get on. I tell my son, he's 13. I'm like, hey, son, you know, if we get pulled over right now, this police officer is not thinking you're a child. You know, my son also, he looks very mature for his age. He looks, when I go places with him, they like, oh, Powwow, that's your homeboy, what's up? You know, they treat him like, they dab him up like he's my boy or something. He's just as tall as me. He works out, so he's like swole, cut up. And he got a big head of hair, so he looks very tall. And he's fresh how he dressed, so he look grown. So I'm telling my son, man, we could pull over. They thinking you a grown up. And I'm like, man, I'm just telling you, because, and he dropped his phone right then. So I'm like, see, things like that. If the police is right there at your window and you drop your phone and you go to pick it up, they not thinking this is a child who's looking at his phone.
Right.
They're thinking this is a grown man. Is that a gun he has? And my son is like, what do you mean? Why would they think I have a gun? He doesn't, you know, get it. He doesn't understand. And I'm like, yeah, it might not make sense because it don't make sense to me. But it's how it is. It's a real fear and worry that, man, if we get pulled over or if you ever get pulled over from basically this point on, because he looks like a grown-up,
right?
That, you know, it's something he's going to have to deal with. You know, how do you, so what, he's like, well, what do I do? I'm like, well, you have to talk with complete and utter respect when you talk to the police. Now, I'm not saying these are things that he should do or that, you know, this is how society should be. I'm not saying that. I'm saying this is what he has to do to avoid every interaction or chance that he could be harmed or get killed. I'm not saying it should be like that, but this is what it is. Man, you got to completely talk with complete utter respect. Sometimes when you get pulled over, there are people that will bully you. The officers will straight up bully you, handle you, tear you up, you know, just talk to you a certain way. They'll antagonize you, try to piss you off just so you can get mad, and when you get mad, they'll beat you up. And, you know, this has happened to me before. Things, you know, where, you know, and shout out to the police officers who aren't like that. You know what I'm saying? All of them aren't, but there for sure are some that are like that. And I'm just trying to prepare my son for, hey, you know, you say yes, sir, no, sir. You don't get any attitude at all. You stay completely still. Anything you do, you say, I'm about to do this. I'm about to reach in my pocket. I'm about to reach under the seat. You look them in your eye. You know, you just take deep breaths. And when it's over and you go on your way. But that's for sure are conversations that I've had with him that I'm going to have to have multiple conversations with him. And hopefully our world will change where he doesn't have to have those conversations with his kids. But it's for sure a thought and feeling. And, you know, this is something we've had to talk to him and my daughter about, you know, where they say, no, I'm not black, I'm not white, I'm mixed.
Uh-huh.
But that might be true, but the world sees them a certain way.
Oh, I never thought about that.
Is that a hard conversation for you?
It is.
It's almost like your son and your daughter have to deny you.
Right. It's a very hard conversation because it's a, how do you see yourself? And then it becomes changed and altered when you think of how do other people see me? How does the world see me? And it's kind of like where, okay, you know, us being Pisces, or I mean a lot of people can relate to this. I don't care what other people think. I don't care what other people think. Well, we don't. But we do care when it affects how the world sees us and how we act and certain things. So I don't want to be seen as this or that. So I do care what people, I don't care what other people think. But if everybody thought I was racist, I definitely would care about that. You know what I'm saying? So there are some things that I do care what people think. You know what I'm saying? But for the most part, you know, people think oh, his hair looked crazy, or he didn't cut his hair, or, you know, he got some ashes from smoking on his shirt. I don't care. I care less. Or his rims are dirty today. I'm not worried about those type of things. But how people see me in terms of my character, or, you know, those type of qualities, I do care how I'm perceived. I do care about that. So it's the same with a child when I'm trying to – I don't want him to adjust who he is. I want him to be all of who he is. Mm. Whoever God made him to be, I want you to be all of that. And some of that he's still learning. Right. He's coming into – you know,
so do they get teased, your kids? Like, hey.
Man, they get teased like, oh, y'all are rich. What kind of car do y'all drive? Oh, how big is your house? Oh, y'all are so rich. You know, they get teased like that. Like,
what you tell them? Y'all are. Y'all are. It's okay.
Yeah, my son, it's okay, baby. Like, you are rich.
My son was like, hey, Dad, we got two Xboxes. Can I get one to my friend so we can play the game together? Because he don't have one.
Oh, I'm that's
like,
nice. Man, that's nice.
Hell no, we ain't giving nobody an Xbox. What you mean? But yeah, it's definitely a different type. You know, because I was bullied and teased for other things. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
No, right. The truth of the matter, because you live in the hood, so you got bullied teeth for being white.
Yeah. Well, man, I got bullied by white people. Those are the people that bullied me.
Wow.
This is, I don't know, I kind of sometimes think like, man, it's just, why am I who I am? Why do I think how I think of things I've been through?
That could be
It was all white people that bullied me. They tied me to trees. What? Man, I got a hell of a bully story, man.
Oh my God.
I was bullied for real. I'm not talking about cyber bullying. Which is all serious stuff, too. I was, like, physically bullied, really real bullied for real.
I didn't know this, Paul. You never told me.
This is a long conversation.
What happened?
I mean, I had a lot going on my whole childhood. There was a lot going on. I was abused by my biological father. He was a drug addict as well.
So where? You never talked about your father. Where is your father? Is he alive?
Man, he is, man. This is something I struggle with. You know, I do a lot with Parents Against Predators for anti-bullying, and a lot of why I feel so charged up to do that was because I was bullied. Now, at the same time, me being bullied helped give me compassion and helped me feel a certain way to other people who were bullied, and that's kind of what motivated it. Made me who I am, the people's champ, I think. So, you know, sometimes those are, you know, the things, the qualities that make you who you are as a person. Same with Parents Against Predators. Shout out to Ms. Papp. This is an organization I'm, you know, very deeply, involved in. But it's because my biological father, he was a child molester. He was, you know, when I was a young child, 5, 6 years old, he had, my parents were divorced. We'd go see him every other weekend. He had a 12-year-old girlfriend with a wig and makeup on. I thought she was a grown-ass woman. I'm 5 years old. I don't know if she's 12 with a wig and makeup on. I'm thinking,
what?
He kidnapped this girl, took her to Canada. They got they lived in Canada for like 2 or 3 years. They got caught, sent them both back here. This is at the time he stopped playing child support, so he lost complete custody of me, and then my stepdad adopted me so that he couldn't have any custody of me. But when they got caught, when they came back here, she went to go live with the young lady. She went to go live with her biological father. She ended up killing herself as soon as she came back.
What?
Now, my biological father, he's not a registered sex offender. He's a serial sex offender. He's not a registered sex offender. All these things happened before you were forced to sign on to the sex offender registry. And I saw somewhere, I don't know who saw this, my sister, my mama saw somewhere online, because they just happened to be looking, and, you know, you go down a rabbit hole online. This fool's some type of youth pastor. I'm like, man, what? It's something I think about every single day of, damn,
when's
man.
When's the last time you saw this man?
When I was 5 years old.
You haven't seen your father since you've been 5?
No.
Does he live in Houston, do you know?
Yeah, he lives in Houston somewhere.
Do you want to see him?
I don't know.
And what was the conversation
I'm gonna
be?
I'm going to beat him up. That fool molesting kids. I'm going to beat him up. I'm going to have all the children out there.
Do y'all look alike?
I hope not. Man. I don't know. I look kind of more like my mom, I think, in my mom's side. Like, I look a lot like my grandfather.
So you haven't physically seen this man.
Man, he could walk through the door right now.
So you might not
I would
even
have
know.
No idea what it looks like.
And he's never tried to get in contact with you. Do you think he knows who you are?
He does know who I am because
you do know that.
Because he has either other children or stepchildren through another wife. and one of them was in the Army or the military. Shout out to him for that. You know, I don't hold nothing against any of his other kids or any of my other family other than...
So you have other brothers and sisters?
I mean, I don't know. The only thing I hold against my family is his brothers and sisters or his parents who, when we were completely on our ass and we didn't have any money for clothes, food, school, for anything, period, they left me, my sister, and my mom completely out to dry. So I...
Did they have money, though? Did they have money?
Oh, yeah.
You mean they had money?
They got money.
Boy, you...
They got... Now, let me tell you, these are things that you don't know when you're growing up as a kid. All I knew is that we was broke. You know, even then, it was... There's levels of being broke, so you just... I'm glad I'm not as broke as the person next door. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, of course, the person on to the right got more. The person to the left got less. So, you wish you had more, but you're glad you don't have less. So, that's how it was.
They had money? Oh, my God.
Now, I didn't know this till recently. My mama told me this more recently because I was asking questions because I was kind of like... struggling with how much of this should I let go, how much should I hold on to. And I'm like, mama, you know, I'm trying to get my mama really to kind of wire me up. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, mama, you know, tell me what. And she's like, oh, yeah, they left us hanging. We ain't had no money for nothing, no money for this, for that. And I'm like, well, asking the same question, well, maybe they didn't have money too. And she, nah, man, my biological grandfather or whoever, he owned some type of oil company where he was almost a billionaire, some type
what?
Of...
What?
So I'm like, where my inheritance at? I don't know if I got some type of inheritance or something, but I ain't have none of that money growing up. Now, I also found out that my through my biological father, some type of way, his parents, his mom, or who, his, it was through his mom, through my grandmother. She was a member of Daughters of the American Revolution, which were when we fought against England for our independence, mm-hmm. you know, July 4th, Independence Day, all that type of stuff. We can trace my lineage all the way back. It's proven, like, the person, I don't know who it is because I don't even know my own family, but it's proven that they were a part of the American Revolution and they fought. So I can't be it because I'm a man, but it's a women's group who are all daughters of people who fought for the American Revolution. So my daughter can go join that group, be a part of that. You know, also, you know, I got family members that came over on the Mayflower.
Wow.
So, man, shout out to whoever they were. For coming on there. Yeah. But this is something I asked my mama, too. Like, mama, did I? Because all I know is my mom's side of the family. And even then, it's only to a certain extent. My mother was molested by both of her grandparents, and her grandparents lived in North Carolina. So we have absolutely no communication with them. Both of my grandparents, my mom's parents, they both passed away. She didn't have any sisters or brothers, so she was the only child. So I don't know, like, a lot of my family history. So I asked my mama, hey, mama, did we own slaves? Did any of our family own slaves, whatever? And she's like, I don't know. As far as she know, we was always too poor to own slaves. But, you know, she was like, well, maybe on, you know, my biological father's side, maybe on his side, because they did have money. But, you know, I'm ready to renounce somebody. I'm like, man, let me know. Let me find out we own slaves. Man, I'm renouncing them, man. I ain't got nothing to do with that.
Speaking of that, with your kids, when they were growing up, were you cautious about who you let around your kids? Because you knew this.
Because of this, man, I'm cautious. Every single person, period. Doesn't matter if I'm related to them, doesn't matter how long I've known them, doesn't matter who it is, doesn't matter what their job is. Every single person, period, in the history of this earth, I'm cautious with my kids around. My mother was molested by both of her grandparents, her blood grandparents. She was also raped. I ain't trying to put my mama business out there like that, but she was also raped by her a neighbor. She was kidnapped one time. Her and her friends were hitchhiking, and they got picked up, and then they got took to the woods by some devil worshipers. Since my mom was already molested and raped, she wasn't a virgin, but the girl she was with was a virgin. My mama woke up on the side of the road. She ain't seen the other girl since. These are like real truth. I'm not making this. These are like Googleable, you know, things you can look up. You know, everything I'm saying. But, you know, so, yeah, these are things that... And me, myself, being that, and this is part of why my biological father met my mom, because he was a predator. And she had been, he kind of sought those type of qualities. And
so he peeped it.
Yeah.
Right, but he saw.
He can
saw
handle her, manipulate mm-hmm. her, he can, whatever. So it got to a point where they were married, where my mom seen it as, I can't be with him. This is too much. You know, I got to protect my kids. So she left him. They got divorced. And then, you know, that thank God my mom had the courage to do that. For sure, these are things that I, like, think about with my kids all the time. Like, anyway, we talk to them about this. Like, it doesn't matter who. We talk about this all the time. You know, spend a night at people's houses, go on field trips. You go, man, these are things we worry about. All that. This is the biggest fear I have as a parent with my kids is something happening to them. You know, them being taken advantage of. And also knowing, being in my biological father, my mom broke down to me, like, how he does it. So it's like, he was, some people, we think of a child predator as a pervert who has a box van, and they're peeping your kids out, and they just, when you're not looking, they kidnap you, and they grab you and run. That's true. But the type of predators we really have to be afraid of are the ones who befriend your kids, who tell your kids, oh, you're so mature for your age. Oh, you know, I have these feelings of love for you. And, you know, your love doesn't have an age. And if you love me, it doesn't matter. People don't want us to be together because of age. And they start putting these thoughts into your child's head. Well, your child is being groomed to fall in love with this person where they feel like, oh, I'm in love with them. My parents just don't understand. They don't get it. I'm in love. This is real love. And they feel like they don't understand. This is a grown adult that's being a predator to you and preying on you and taking advantage of your, you know, your naivety and how old you are and the thing, you know, your comprehension of all these things. These are the ones we got to worry about who are doing it behind closed doors, texting, sending love letters, this is, you know, all these type of things where they're grooming the child to have a relationship. So when my biological father, when he kidnapped a girl and they went to Canada, he didn't grab her outside of Kroger and put her in a van and run. They lived in the same apartment complex, and she was his neighbor. And she would come over there to watch TV because he had cable or whatever, things like that, where her parents didn't think they were doing nothing wrong. Little did they know she's coming over there to be a girlfriend. She was in a real relationship with a grown man and, you know, not realizing she's being preyed upon. So these are things we for sure got to worry about. You know, they say keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer. And those, a lot of times we put a block, a shade over our eyes around people we trust. But there's some things you always got to be just on standby, on edge about. This is why also, like with me, now that I have kids, I look at it, you know, how I treat other kids and how other parents or whatever. Well, I might have got offended if someone, whatever, was like, they don't want their kid around me. Hey, I get it, because I feel the same way. Not that I don't want my kids around certain people, but it's, you know, you're thinking this in the back of your mind of, you know, my kid is with this person. Hey, watch out. And it has nothing to do with the person, the individual. It's just you have to have this blanket type of mentality.
You don't know. You don't know.
You don't know.
Man, it's amazing. I've been around Paul since he's been a child, and I don't know none of this.
Hey, some of the stuff I just learned.
But the bullying thing, and you was tied up to a tree.
Oh, I can tell. Man, they used to make me lay in the middle of the street and throw golf balls at me if I move. And cars will be coming, and if I get up to move, I gotta sit there in the car, gotta stop, and then I gotta get up, and they'll take off running. But if I stay there, these are all people that were like 5-6 years older than me, 4-5 years older than me.
They were terrorizing
me. Yeah, they would terrorize me all the time, man. And they would tie me to a tree, put lunch meat on my face, let the dogs loose.
You don't think you need to get like talk to anybody about? I mean, you talk now, but I don't know if you ever felt like you needed to go talk to somebody about all these things that have happened to you because.
Like counseling type of thing?
Yeah, therapy.
It for sure definitely would help. Some of those type of things, you know, I went through as a child for other things, for the drug, like being in my father was a drug addict, alcoholic. I would go to Al-Anon, Alateen. Those are things that I went to as a kid where it's basically like AA for family members of alcoholics and Narc Anonymous or whatever it's called, you know, Narcanon, whereas, you know, people who are addicted to drugs and narcotics is the family members. So that's something I went through as a child, like up until I was a teenager, until I was just like embarrassing to go. I don't want to go to that. Everybody here, parents are dope fiends. I don't want to go to that. But this is also where, you know, I go to those things. I deal with these things. I think about like me having even the small amount of counseling or whatever that I have had, it helped me tremendously because certain things like, man, I could never sell crack because I don't have that heart in me to be heartless of I gotta beat up a dope fiend if they stole from me or they, you know, if they owe me some money for like certain things that I I can't do. Like, because I when I see the dope fiend, I see my father or I see a relative or something where, you know, it might, yeah, they might have did this or they might have deserved an ass whooping, but I don't got it in me to do that. I'm not heartless like that where, you know, I do want to get paid, but there's certain things that I just can't do, you know. So I do feel like certain things, you know, the little counseling I have had has helped me some ways, mm-hmm. but for sure I need some more, because this is what I struggle with as a parent too, being that, man, having a son, man, I don't know, I was afraid to be a father to my son, because I didn't know what to do or how to do or whatever. I don't want to let him down, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to, but you know, I think the key ingredient to being a parent is love and just trying, you know what I'm saying? And you learn as you go, you make mistakes, and you know, there's definitely things I regret as a parent of, maybe I shouldn't have fussed at him for this or that, or maybe I shouldn't have, you know, this or that. But then I worry about spoiling my kids too. Like, man, I don't want to spoil my kids, and then they grow up feeling entitled or whatever. But you know, the one thing I'm grateful for is that my kids, that they really have a sense of gratefulness, of gratitude. That's like in their spirit. They have a spirit of gratitude where they don't feel entitled of, I'm supposed to have this, or my dad's famous, we supposed to do, you know, we supposed to have a red carpet, whatever. You know, they don't have that at all. They have a real sense of gratitude.
This got real serious. Not really sure how we got this.
Yeah, we didn't even mention the dog show.
Paul's been up here a million times. I've known him since he probably been about 12 years old.
Yeah,
really just blown my mind.
Yeah.
I hate to do this transition. So, Paul, tell me about these dogs, man. I'm sorry, y'all.
Dog.
We got to do it. He'll be on business, y'all. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Yes, sir.
J-Mac over there want to be a barber Wawa and everything.
I just have one more question, though. What? Going back to it. So, how will you react to your kids saying the N-word?
They're not allowed to say it. They know better. If they did say they'd be in trouble, I don't know if they'll get a whooping. We have spanked our kids before. We don't do that no more. It's been a long time. It's been maybe 5-6 years. Anytime they got spankings or whoopings, it was like they was, you know, before they got to kindergarten age, you know what I'm saying? So I can't see myself. Let me first say this. Ain't no whooping my son. He gonna whoop me. So that for sure ain't, that's not even possible. But, you know,
look out when they're like 18, 21, though. Like, they're pretty much adults. They cursing.
I mean, you know.
So what you want Paul to say? He okay with his kids using the N-word?
I told my kids.
He already laid the foundation as a father.
I was taught that if I use any cuss word, that's a lack of intelligence on my part. There's so many other words I can use. I could be clever or more creative or more intelligent to use an alternative to, you know, the minimal words that are so easy to throw out there and get overused. So. I mean, I told my kids they not allowed to use it. Of course, when they grown and they do living their own life, doing their own thing, they gonna make their own choices. Hopefully, I'll put it on the same type of way my mom taught me is that I'm grown, but I'm still not, some things I'm not doing, because some of these things are specifically for my mama. I'm not letting my mama down. I'm not doing certain things. Even if for the only reason just to not let my mama down, that's cool. So hopefully, I'll put it on them too. But I told them, you know, hey, you go to college, you get you a college education, you know, you got you a degree on the wall. Then if you educated like that and you still feel like you should say the N-word, well, maybe you earned it. Then at least, you know, you got a degree or you understand, you're capable of understanding and grasping the meaning behind the word, where it came from, where some people mean it, where, you know, these type of hidden meanings are still in the word today. You know, I don't know. There's going to be on them to make that decision, but... You know, my wife say the N-word every day, all the time. It's a little tough. Well, I'm like, no, don't say it. She like, yes, say it. No, don't say it.
Oh,
now, she not trying to, you know, get them. She not encouraging them to say it either.
But it's just,
I don't think she would have a problem with them saying it like I would have a problem
Paul.
With them saying it.
Shut up.
That's the truth.
We talking about these dogs now.
Okay.
Yeah, let's talk about the dogs.
I hope your wife don't beat you up. All right, so what's the deal with these dogs, bro?
Yeah, man, shout out to Texan Bullies, Billionaire Bullies Club, Despicables. Some of my friends, they've been breeding high-end English Bulldogs or French Bulldogs. They've been breeding them for a while. These are high-end, like, you know, $30,000 for a dog.
What?
What?
Sometimes, you know, sometimes they more. Sometimes they 50,000,
60,000. Jimbo love dogs, too. Yeah. Sometimes they 50,000, 60,000.
Yeah. Now, let me tell you why they're so expensive. What? Some of them, they're very exotic breeds, rare breeds. You know, the color coding of the coats are hard to come by. They're rare. But this is why they're so expensive, because if you have the dog, you can, in turn, breed the dog. So right. It's a moneymaker. So that's why it's worth $50,000, because your first breed of puppies, you're going to make your money back the first day. You know what I'm saying? So, that, yeah, but that's why, they're high. We definitely got a little bit of the, on the low end, too. But anyway, they've been selling dogs. They've been breeding dogs for a while. I've been working with them for a while. They're good friends of mine. And we've gone to dog shows a few times. I perform at them, or they'll have a booth with their dogs. Mm-hmm. And for the longest, it's like, man, we need to do our own dog show. Why not? Let's do our own dog show. So we got together. We're doing it at Humble Civic Center. November 2nd is going down. It's an all-day event from 10 to 8, 10 to 9. We're going to be there. All breeds of dogs are welcome. All breeds of dogs, not just English Bulldogs, French Bulldogs, but all breeds of dogs are welcome. And all kids. It's a family event. It's an all-ages event. You know, we definitely going to have a great day. I'm going to be there performing. I'm going to be there all day long. We're going to have all kind of guest performers. Killer Kaleon, Lil Kiki. The dog got the piece and chain, too. The dog is Astros ready.
Is the
dog? Hey,
that dog don't.
Hey, you got your credit card right there.
What is that dog mixed with?
Hey, we need to get her credit card.
How much would this dog?
Nothing.
Yeah, just in case
the way it was bred.
Just in case you drop him, we need your. Nah, just lounges.
That's Houston homegrown.
Sit right there.
We got Joseph in here from Texan Bullies. What's up, Joseph?
What's going down,
Joseph? Welcome to the show,
guys.
So explain what this.
Just get the dog in the shot, not me.
I don't. What?
I'm serious.
It looked like a rabbit.
Joseph, what kind of dog is that, first of all?
Can I put him on the table?
That's an English Bulldog.
You can't. He might pee, though.
Rare color.
He might right. pee.
That's a rare color.
You like, yo, you giving him the hatter. Let him pee on hatter.
He's like a rabbit.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, but the event is going to be November 2nd. Shout out to the Bulldog Money team. Hey, shout out to ESG, Johnny Dang. Yeah, you know your boy Powerwall. Of course, I'm going to be in the house. Killer Kaleon, Lil Kiki. Shout out to everybody that's going to be in the house.
Dogs smell good, too.
How big is that?
Where can they get tickets to the show?
That dog is going to be, how many pounds?
About 60 pounds.
60 pounds. So right
it's
now,
it's going to be 60 pounds?
Right now, you're getting the very small, petite version of
okay,
that
how much
dog.
Does this? How much would this puppy cost?
Well, his brother sold to the UK for about $35,000.
What?
Okay, I need to give you this dog back.
But listen.
I ain't in the market for no dog. This has been, that's a car right there, brother.
It's an investment. It's an investment. It's an investment.
Paul, the economy's down right now, so that'll sell for about 25 grand.
Yeah.
Oh, you're doing me a deal.
Buy low, sell high.
I appreciate the discount, brother.
No, but we joke about, the money being made with the dogs, but in all honesty, of course, his man's best friend is great companion. You know, it definitely helps lift your spirits. You know, of course, man, when you bring a pet into your life like this, you know, it definitely can add a lot of joy. It's a responsibility as well. It's not
Paul,
a toy.
Don't leave that part out.
Yeah, for sure. These are not toys. Let me say to all my rapper friends out there, you know, sometimes
what
we
color the dog eyes, blue. Go ahead, keep talking, Paul.
Hey, Paul, real quick, on your event, is there going to be a mutt category so I can bring my dogs out?
Mutts are
You're
welcome.
Stupid.
I don't know if there'll be a mutt category, but mutts are definitely welcome. All breeds
or
of dogs.
Somewhat close to a breed.
Yeah.
Poncho.
Hey,
yeah.
Poncho.
Yeah. Purple. And you can get your tickets at Eventbrite. Of course, the link is in my bio on Instagram. You can get your tickets at Eventbrite. You can get your tickets the day of, too, but... You know, we sold a lot of tickets. We're looking at, we're going to be pretty close to capacity. I'm not saying it's going to sell out, but if you wait till the door to get your tickets, get your tickets now. Don't wait.
Hatter, I think you should buy that dog and put him on, like, your albums from here on out. You know,
I should.
Hatter.
Hey, then it'll be right off. It'll be a text right off.
Hatter and Pancho together.
You can bring him to work every day, Hatter. I don't care.
You say that now, so you gotta be the one taking them out to pee.
Hatter gonna be like, I need 10-minute break. Pancho gotta go.
This might be a
potty break. Yeah, you know, like DJ Khaled, but Pancho.
I know it's a dog show, but do you all sell dogs at the show? I know there might not be.
The dogs are actually sold out. I think most of them.
So you can't go to the show and like buy you a puppy.
Well, I mean, you can do that. That is an option. There are people that will be selling them there, and we might have some.
You'll have some puppy slangers.
Yeah, they're for sure gonna be sold. But if you mean like this dog, like a lot of his dogs are like already accounted for. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of his, there's like a waiting list for a lot of the Texan Bullies dogs.
What's
too much going on.
I'm waiting for Poncho to take a poop on Hatter.
Hatter poop.
Hey, I'm praying that don't happen.
But you definitely can buy dogs, though. If you're looking to buy a French Bulldog, an English Bulldog, or any of these breeds of dogs, they definitely will be available. There's going to be a lot of great breeders there. Shout out to the Bulldog Money Team, Texan Bullies, Despicables, Billionaire Bullies Club. But there's going to be a lot of breeds of dogs, a lot of breeders out there. So shout out to all of them, man. You know, and you definitely can get a dog at the show.
Paul Hatter didn't hear a word you said. He's been messing with Poncho.
I'm glad. I hope y'all doing an interview. Wrap up whenever y'all have to. Yeah. I'm gone. I might be buying me a puppy.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. I don't even like dogs, but I like this puppy right here.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
He got, like, gray eyes or blue
he
eyes
has
or
a
something.
Chain.
Yeah. If I was in the market to buy a dog, though.
He'd have a chain.
It got to be a dog like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, buddy. Hey, what's good? Look how he's looking at me.
I can't see you with like a Pomeranian or something.
He want to go home with me.
Yeah.
This bro, dude.
He's got 25,000.
Does Poncho have an Instagram page?
He definitely chilled out a little bit.
No.
Look at him. Look at him. Hey, dog. What's up, buddy? You want to go home? Did y'all wrap this up?
That's going to be the official box dog.
Tell him, give him all the information.
Why, how?
November 2nd is going down to Humble Civic Center. Bulldog Money Team is the official Swinging in the Rain. The inaugural, that means it's the first annual. Yeah, we kept saying first annual. We realized that the correct verbiage is inaugural. Yeah, it's the first inaugural annual. Well, yeah, so the first annual, meaning, a.k.a. inaugural, Swinging in the Rain dog show, man. Be there, baby. November 2nd. Get your tickets now. Eventbrite. You don't want to miss it. All the booths are pretty much sold out. We might squeeze a couple more. If any vendors want to get a booth, maybe hit us up. But for so November 2nd, all ages welcome, all breeds welcome. It's a family event. You don't want to miss it. Come out, have a great time. Already, baby.